miss out on listening to your favourite segment of Sunshine's Table Talk with me, Leah, well, don't worry, you can catch up now. You're hanging out with Leah on Sunshine's Table Talk this morning, and joining me now in the studio, in the actual flesh, is Dan from Collective Shout. Welcome back to Sunshine, Dan.
It is so good to be back in WA and great to be back at Sunshine. It's lovely to meet you in the flesh too.
Yes, I know, putting a face to the name after all this time. Tell me, what have you been up to? Because it's been a little while between visits.
It has been a little while. Traveling around Australia, lots of schools, managed to go to the US as well for my mate's documentary launch.
Oh, cool. Tell me about that, because we touched on it briefly when we were talking off air, and I would kind of like to know, what is it?
Sure. It's a documentary called Buying Her. Unfortunately, for those listening, it's not a documentary about fluffy animals in the wild. Okay. It's a documentary about men whose consumption of pornography escalates to the point that they're purchasing women.
Wow.
From the sex industry.
Yeah, okay. So what was your involvement? Were you supporting him?
Supporting and hosting the premieres in different cities. So we started in LA, went to Portland, Vegas, San Fran.
Okay.
And then hosted some men's workshops as well on the West Coast. And so they were all-day events on a Saturday where we just got to unpack how our visions of masculinity and sexuality formed and how can we have a healthier experience of that for ourselves, for our mates, and obviously for our wives.
Yeah, wow. And during that time, how was the documentary received as you were doing the premieres? How did it sort of...
I mean, it's pretty confronting. Yeah, you're hearing from survivors of prostitution and trafficking, and it's the first ever documentary that actually has the men who were purchasing front up to camera and explain their stories, their side. Wow. It's the first time their voices have ever been heard, and not in a way to pity them, but for them to actually just explain how they ended up there. Because let's be honest, all men start as little, sweet, innocent boys. Yeah. And it's like, how did you end up here?
Yes.
And it just talked about this compulsive sexual deformation that has happened over time and where it led them to some really dark places. And one of the men who joined me on the panels, on the discussions, was a man who features in the documentary who went to sexually assault and kill a woman. Oh. And he was caught, he was arrested, went to jail. And 40 years later, he's obviously significantly transformed his life and spends his days trying to help men through their sex addiction.
Wow. That is huge.
Yeah.
It's like, wow. That would have been really quite confronting and I suppose very impactful work to do as well and to be a part of. Is that coming to Australia?
I'm hoping to. I'm advocating. I'm speaking with my friends later this week to see if they could come out next year in February. It'd be great to have us on and talk about it in the lead up if we can make that happen. TBC at this point in time. But yeah, the response is, I think it's a lament. It's a sense of, this is devastating because the numbers are horrific. I mean, in Spain and Germany, every single day, I think there's a million purchases of sex, which is mostly women, obviously children as well, and some men. And those are numbers that I can't even fathom. I just can't even wrap my head around them. And what that says about the vision of sexuality that, frankly, far too many men, we're talking millions and millions of men, have been deformed into.
And
where does that come from? Well, and for me, and obviously you guys know what we do at Collective Shout, like no surprises looking at the culture around us, the messages we receive about men, women, bodies, sex, sexuality, it's all pretty toxic.
Yeah.
And what is the result of that if we don't actually point to a higher or healthier vision and a sacred vision of sex and intimacy, and you see the carnage of that?
Yeah, absolutely. We have to go to a short break, but when we come back, we're going to talk more about this culture and in particular something called sextortion, which our listeners may or may not have heard of. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with Dan from Collective Shout after this. You're back with Leah on Table Talk this morning, and we've been talking to Dan from Collective Shout this morning, and we're talking about changing culture, which really needs to happen when it comes to pornography and the way we look at male masculinity, how you know, that is even taught, you know, from the ground up anyway, is, I mean, that's a whole other topic in itself. But I wanted to focus on something that has been in the news over the last couple of months, which is sextortion. There was a few articles that came out about a lot of males particularly getting caught up in sending nudes or naked photos, and then them being extorted to that they're going to release those images, and they have to, you know, either keep sending them or hand over money or whatever it may be. Can you talk to me about sextortion? Where do you feel like this has come from? What's the situation, and why are men so susceptible in this area?
It's a great question. So it's been around for a long time. It just manifests in different ways. And obviously, with the rise of sexualized media, social media and internet-enabled devices, it just means that this is so much more readily available, and predators and groomers can find many avenues to attracting and grooming young men especially. So yeah, 95% of victims are young boys in this country, and they're being approached online thinking that usually a young woman is interested in them, who's flirting with them, who's talking with them, and they start to develop this supposed online relationship. And this young woman, you know, shows how interested and keen she is by sending naked images of herself. But of course, this is a predator who's somehow got these images, and this young boy is then not thinking,
yeah.
Let's be honest, yes. His frontal lobe isn't fully developed, and thinks, wow, this person's keen on me. And they said, you know, send me some photos of you back, and then I'll send more, you know, if you want more. And so his, you know, brain's not in it, and he's too excited, and he does this. And then they instantly say, well, I'm going to send this now to your principal, to your footy coach, to your parents. I know who you are, unless you send money. And every school I go to nearly gives me an update of how many boys they know of who this has happened to, let alone those that they don't. Yeah. Just here yesterday in Perth, I was hearing from boys that this has happened to them. Smart boys from good schools, this is happening to them, from good homes. Such is the nature of the internet. And I think it is unfortunately boys being preyed on, because unfortunately they're so susceptible to this because of what they're consuming, what they're imagining, how they're thinking in those moments, and not thinking, because they've got this idea in their mind.
Yes. I want to talk to you as well about what parents can do specifically, but we're going to come back to that shortly. But before we go to another break, I find this really interesting because I think traditionally you think, or maybe more along the lines of revenge porn, which is often happens or has traditionally happened, I suppose, in the media. It presents it too as a female problem, where, you know, you might have sent something to your partner and then the partner sends it on when you're no longer in that relationship anymore. So, I mean, this is sort of the next level of that, where you've got sort of criminals taking advantage. But are all of those things linked? Like, in terms of revenge porn, is that happening to males as well? Or what's your knowledge across those two?
Definitely not. I think it's a different power dynamic.
Yeah,
you don't as much. It's not saying it doesn't happen to males, but you don't see females as often wanting to punish boys with that, their exes.
Yeah, okay.
So it's to do with more of a power imbalance, in a way that a lot of boys can punish girls. And we just see a difference in that. But I think it's more broadly part of a culture that is just dehumanizing everyone, reducing them to objects, to sex objects, which especially happens to women and girls.
Yeah.
And so it's just part of that fabric. And these are all just different manifestations of what I call porn culture. It just is all different manifestations of when we treat people like pieces of meat, then we see sextortion. We see this, you know, image-based abuse. We see the increased sexualized behavior and sexual harassment and sexual assaults. And, you know, it's no shock horror where we think this is coming from. Of course, we know these horrors are coming because we have so normalized this from such a young age.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to be right back. We've got to go to another break. But when we come back, Dan from Collective Shout will be continuing the conversation. And we're going to maybe talk about what parents can do to support their kids as well. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. You're with Leah on Table Talk, and I am joined, of course, by Dan from Collective Shout, and we're talking about sextortion this morning. And the next big thing we need to tackle as part of this is what parents can do, because I think it can be a very overwhelming and scary thought to, first of all, think that maybe your son is being extorted by someone in a criminal way, let alone then thinking about, okay, how did they get to this place in the first place. What can parents do if, say, your son comes to you and say, look, this is what's happened to me, or maybe you stumble across something and you see a message or you see something that comes up? What can they do?
Yeah, I tell young men that if this has happened to you or a friend, to encourage them to get support. I mean, yes, it's embarrassing. Yes, it's awful having to now deal with this and the consequences, but it's better than the tragedy of boys taking their own lives because they've panicked when they found themselves in these situations. And so I encourage boys to speak to their parents, who can engage the eSafety Commission, the federal police, the local police, to actually help de-escalate this.
Yeah, great.
To obviously have preventative conversations is the key. Delaying, obviously, access to devices as long as possible, which has got known mental health outcome, like positive outcomes, but so many other benefits of online safety. But in the event that you are giving your kids devices, letting them know that these are the potential risks, to let them know that they're not in trouble, they're not bad or wrong or evil if they're exposed to things, or if they're groomed by people online, that they need to come and tell mum and dad that they will be supported. And so we can't panic or shame them if this has happened, otherwise they won't tell their parents. And I tell the young people everywhere I go, please go tell mum and dad. I want those lines of communication open. But I think it's also to let them know that if this does happen, that they'll have support, and to be aware, perhaps to even unpack like red flag messages. And I ask the young people these questions from year 5, year 6, year 7. Would they be aware if someone says, let's keep this between us, or let's change apps, or make sure, you know, you don't tell mum and dad this, you can trust me, you know, like, are kids aware of red flag messages and red flag profiles as well that are fake people? Yeah, like a 12-year-old shouldn't have 2,000 friends on Instagram. No. Like, don't be on Instagram for starters, but like, they don't have 2,000 friends.
Yeah,
who are these people?
Yes.
And so I think it's like building in that both vocabulary and kind of critical thinking skills and keeping those lines of dialogue open.
Yeah, great. And then what about more broadly, if we're looking at pornography as parents, how do we sort of tackle this topic? Because obviously you don't want it to be, you want to have that open communication happening from an early age across the board on all sorts of different topics. But I think sometimes pornography can be one of those things that parents get very nervous about, or they don't know how to tackle. What do you suggest as a way to have those conversations? Because there's also the side of, okay, you don't want to bring up things before someone is even aware of it, and then you're exposing to things that they didn't, wouldn't have even maybe gone down yet. Mm-hmm. So there's that side of things. But yeah, what's the best approach in this sort of thing?
I think the biggest thing we can all do is own how pornography or porn culture has first harmed us. I think when we don't resolve that, I think it makes us awkward and uncomfortable. Yeah. Whereas I own the fact, and I say it every single day, I was exposed at age 11. It started to impact how I saw men, women, sex, bodies, intimacy, consent, respect. Let's own that, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Even if you haven't necessarily been exposed yourself, which is unlikely.
Yeah.
But if you have, like, let's just be cognizant of how it has shaped us, how it has harmed us, how it hasn't set us up for healthy, mutual, reciprocal relationships and sexual experiences.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a big part of it. And then recognizing that, yeah, this is the world young people are growing up in. The average age of exposure is now 13. It's 11 for boys. 10% of 9-year-olds have seen pornography, according to the latest Children's Commissioner report. This is the world. So for me, it's about having preventative conversations. It's not a one-off sex talk, but lots of teachable moments that arise based on things that they might hear or they ask a question. A big thing that I always say, and I'm certainly not a parenting guru, is like, ask them questions.
Yeah.
This is what I do when I work with all ages, but especially say year 6, year 7, year 8 boys, is I'm just asking them lots of questions up front to ascertain what they know very quickly.
Okay.
And for context, for parents listening, these are the stats that I have anecdotally in every single school. 60% of year 6 boys have had sex bots or other kind of things drop sexually explicit content into their feeds.
Wow.
I ask them this routinely. They put their hands up. They're aware of it. By the time we get to year 9 and 10, it's 95 to 100% of boys. So it's not even if they're searching for it. This is the landscape. And that should cause us to have empathy and compassion for them, because, gosh, puberty's hard enough, let alone having to navigate all this as your brain is developing. And so it's not a matter of like, if, it's when. And the research is clear, by having these preventative conversations, it means that they will come and talk to you.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is what we want.
Absolutely.
We want them to know that. But I think, yeah, asking them questions, and then you can supplement the information. You know, you can come alongside and realize, okay, they don't know this, but what could be helpful, or what questions do they have, or what are the other boys or girls at school saying? And that way you can get a sense of what's in their environment that they're having to navigate. But we tell parents and educators that, yeah, once you sit in the sessions, you'll see what young people are actually navigating, tragically, at such young ages.
Yeah, I mean, that's 60% at age, what did you say?
Year 6 boys.
Year 6, yeah, is just
Yeah, and that's absolutely. On Snapchat, TikTok, gaming feeds. It just finds them.
Yeah, absolutely. We have to go to another break, but we're going to continue the chat with Dan after this. It is a Feel Good Friday, and you're back with Dan from Collective Shout, and he's making us feel good by giving us the stats, which maybe don't make you feel good. Actually, you might be a little bit depressed after this, but...
I love that this is part of a Feel Good Friday. Look, it's feel good because at the end of the day, we don't get anywhere by being naive. We get to do something, be empowered, be proactive, tell a better story, and hopefully embody healthier, more respectful relationships, absolutely. Which our young people desperately need.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, there's so much that comes under a Feel Good Friday, you know, if you're having better open communication, you've got better relationships with friends, we're living our best
great outcomes.
Feel good life. We could deep dive into so many aspects of this, but we just don't have enough time in this day, especially because we're surrounded by dogs, which is making it even more of a Feel Good Friday. But I'd love to know, you're in Perth for a couple more weeks and then you're ducking off around the country again, but what are you doing at the moment? Are you doing your schools?
Yep.
Tell me what's
been
happening.
Here last week, this week, just in schools, all sorts of different schools, state schools, co-ed schools, yep. all boys schools, and loving the experience from years 7 to 12 so far,
yeah.
sometimes younger, but yeah, 7 to 12, and just having those conversations, then speaking to staff and educators, and then doing parent and community events, and
yeah,
enjoying those opportunities to engage and I guess equip young people. You know, the question that I keep coming back to is like, what is your vision of masculinity and sexuality
right.
informed by? Are they healthy things? Are they good things? Are they virtuous? Or are they things that are harming you and harming others? And that's pretty much the conversation. It's not about giving them a list of rules, but hopefully a compelling vision of what their life and their relationships could be if they were the best version of themselves, if they were the healthiest version of themselves. And so I've just loved the privilege of that. Got a couple more schools this week.
Yeah, great.
And then I have a week of just working remotely and doing the other parts of my job, the advocacy, the media.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to be at the Youth Care Conference
on
the Monday.
Oh, fantastic. And what have been sort of the feedback at the moment from, you know, the boys that you're talking to? What are things that are front of mind? Obviously, as you mentioned before, sextortion is part of it. But what are the other things that are coming up for people that you're talking to?
I think the social shaming that boys unleash on each other is probably the thing that probably causes me to be the most despondent, because decency, respect, courage, empathy, kindness from young men is routinely shamed.
Yeah, wow.
Any sense of, and you know, because that's seen as weak, right?
Yeah.
Being loving, being respectful, being kind, like that's shamed.
Yeah.
And you're like, what a tragedy. And what is going to be the fruit of that if we don't rectify that socially? Mm-hmm. And so that's probably the biggest thing that I have boys sticking around afterwards, sometimes with tears in their eyes, saying how exasperating they find it because they're being so shamed for just trying to be a decent guy,
yeah.
for not wanting to conform to the pack. And so that's probably what I hear the most of, as well as lines of boys who tell me that they are consuming pornography. And when I ask them, and not to judge them, just out of curiosity, I'm like, why are you looking at it? And they say, because I'm bored.
Yeah,
I'm bored.
Wow.
I'm bored. I'm bored. I'm bored. Yeah. What a tragedy that we have young men with so much available to them, wasting so much time, gifts, talents, abilities, scrolling and on screens, doing things that harm them and harm the world, rather than unleashing all that potential for good. And it's why I say to boys, like, no free dopamine. You got to go work for your dopamine and go
absolutely.
Do the things that make you come alive and contribute not only to your life, but to the lives of those around you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great point to end on as well, no free dopamine, because it goes across the board for so many things, and is such an important message to make sure we're looking after our whole well-being as well, and making sure we're well-rounded individuals. We're almost out of time, but to close, Dan, can you leave us with sort of a message of hope or inspiration, something that you just want people to be encouraged by, whether it's, you know, dealing with their teenage sons, or if it is, you know, young guys that are listening? What have you got for us?
So I see so much of this as what I call performative toxicity. It's not truly who young men are. It's how they feel they have to act. Hence, a boy could be nice to you, and then if another boy enters the room, he changes. Everybody knows that story. It's a tale as old as time. But what I've seen is creating space for young men to be their best selves. And what that looks like in some of the most profound moments over the last month is seeing boys recognizing that they weren't aware of what was going on in other people's lives.
Yeah, right.
Some of the trials, the suffering, the pain. And when they do, when people are brave enough and courageous enough to share that, to invite others to see us as human, to see our realities, to then say to the boys, what's it going to look like to care for our mates? What's it going to look like to show up in this moment? And to see a group of year seven boys the other day in regional Victoria go and put their hand on their mate's shoulder, rub their back, give them a hug, apologize, and just do things that recognize, I haven't treated you as well as I ought to,
wow.
And to want to actually restore that relationship, to want to actually show up in a healthier way. It was one of the most beautiful moments of my life. And I get to see moments like that everywhere I go, where I get to see the best of young men and then champion that and savor those moments. And it's why we keep going and it's why we're here.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's such important work that you're doing, and I imagine I would be crying all the time. I'd be like, oh, it's so beautiful.
Yep.
But hey, Dan, thank you so much for joining me in studio this morning. It's been great to chat. We'll have to always have you back, maybe a shorter time between.
That would be wonderful. I'd love that.
Between visits. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. But thanks, Dan.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Sunshine's Table Talk with me, Leah. Remember, you can hear me live every single day, Monday to Friday, from 10 to 12. See you then.